All right.
All right, we are good to go.
Excellent.
So, all right, well, let's start off with your year of graduation, including if that was like spring, summer, fall, and your major.
Sure. So I graduated in spring of 2009, and my major was drum set performance, concentration in improvisational studies.
Right, you were sorry, I apologize for forgetting. You graduated from Berkeley, right? So, as
Yeah.
opposed to Boston Conservatory.
Right. Yep. Berkeley.
Got
Yep.
it. So, officially a performance major with a principal in drum set.
Correct.
Gotcha. BOKO people describe their majors a little bit differently. So, it's like, just
Yeah.
laughing.
Yep.
You described your major like a BOKO grad. So, I was like, wait.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all good, man.
Yeah.
All right, so we will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. What do? Where do you do it?
Sure. So I'm in charge of product marketing at early stage software company Allego. We're out of Needham, Mass. Early stage software. It's a video sharing
But early
platform.
stage basically means you're relying on investor money.
Well, we would be, but we actually are funded with sales. We've actually been really disciplined. It's about a 5-year-old company now. I've been on for about 2 years.
Okay,
We've
then.
never taken venture capital, funded with sales. The two co-founders put in less than $1 million of their own money in the beginning, and we've just, been really disciplined. We're in this, old kind of just small little office for a number of years until we really kind of, we're able to grow just organically. And actually this past year, we were number 5 fastest growing software company, in America on the Inc. 500. So like really just the company's really taking off. I came in, like I said, 2 years ago as a marketing intern. I was the third person in the marketing department. And now, about 10, 11 months ago, I got hired on full time as product marketing manager. So now I'm in charge of product marketing. So basically, I'm in charge of messaging, positioning, competitive differentiation.
Oh, I'm sorry, can you give me sort of your title or your role in the marketing department one more?
Yep. So the title is product marketing manager. Yep. So,
And you say your responsibilities include.
Developing positioning and messaging, as well as competitive differentiation, and to kind of in more.
Competitive differentiation. Here's how our product is different and better from the of the competitors.
Exactly. And, when it's a software product, there's a, 100 different feature functionality, and each competitor's product has their subtle differences. So, I'm in charge of keeping track of all that information, monitoring the competition, and then developing messaging and positioning to differentiate.
I was curious because when you said positioning, do you end up telling them what to build? Or is it more like you take what they build and say, okay, how's this different? Let's market this the best we can.
So I end up having input in what gets built for sure. I wouldn't say it's so much me telling them what to build, but it's definitely because the what gets built is based on a lot, based on my observations in the market, the sales team's observations in the market, as well as customers that we already have. They put in requests for what they want, and so it's kind of a mix of all that. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely
Sure.
involved. I'm involved in the development cycle, deeply involved. And then it's my job when every time we do a new release, I'm on the hook for all the positioning and messaging. So I go through and say, okay, what features are we coming out with? How can we bucket them? What are we going to name them? And then how are we going to talk about them? And then I'll create a positioning and messaging guide, and then, train the sales team, on what the features are, how we're going to talk about it, and then train the marketing team.
Yeah, if I could you define positioning here, because you're not the first marketing person I've spoke with, but you're the first one who's been using this word positioning a lot. So I'm curious what you mean by that.
Yeah. So basically, how are we going to position ourselves relative to the competition for all these different feature functionalities?
Define positioning without using the word position.
How are we going to think of ourselves? What are we? How are we going to think of ourselves? What is our identity?
Okay.
You know.
Got it.
What is this particular set of feature and functionality, what is our identity when you're thinking about, you know, our capabilities and what we can do? Like, what are we going to call ourselves? How are we going to think about ourselves in this marketplace? And then how are we going to articulate that?
Sure. That's great. Now, you said the marketing team is about 10 people these days.
Yeah, about that right now. Yeah.
All in the same office, is like a one office, or are they going like multiple?
Yep, one office right now. Well, we have a couple salespeople spread across the country, but they're in their own, working on their own, like working at WeWork offices and stuff. I mean, our office, we just have one in Needham.
Got it. And so there's 10 people in marketing. How big's the company in terms of people?
Right now we're at about 70 people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So marketing is a not insignificant share of that 70.
That's right.
Are you including salespeople in that among the 10, or is sales a whole different thing?
Sales is a whole different thing. There's probably about 15, 20 salespeople.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Yep. Now, could you sort of tell us a little bit more? We skipped it for the beginning. Like, Allega is doing software. What's the product or products?
Yeah. So the product is a knowledge sharing platform and learning and training platform. So it's, think of like a corporate YouTube. You know, when you don't know how to fix a tire or fix a leaky faucet or change a tire, fix a leaky faucet, whatever it may be. You know, if there's a random thing that you need to learn how to do quickly, people turn to YouTube to watch somebody else do it. But sure. What Allego provides is a company-specific corporate YouTube for salespeople to go in and see how their best peers, message different products, how they handle certain objections, how they deliver competitive responses.
So it's for internal use.
Exactly.
So you don't want to put a video up on YouTube that has all your special secrets.
Exactly. Yep. So you exactly right. And then it's also, you know, it's when you're talking about enterprise salespeople or just salespeople in general, technology initiatives, you know, if you've got to go onto YouTube and record a video and go onto the website, upload it, all this stuff, it's too much of a hassle. Allego makes it really, really easy. And basically, you know, what you're able to do, because it's video sharing technology, you're able to, as a manager or trainer, say, you know, at a large, at an enterprise, say, financial services company or a medical device company where you have kind of a real complex sale. Those are kind of the customers we target. You're as a trainer, you're able to say, you know what, I'm going to send out a video coaching exercise to the whole field force, and I want everybody to submit their version of how they do the pitch. Okay, for a particular product or whatever it may be.
Okay.
Everybody submits their pitches. You're able to go, the managers go in and are able to provide feedback. And we have, you know, patented point in time feedback, like a timeline where you're able to embed actual comments and have whole discussions inside the video. And so able to kind of do coaching and take a lot of this coaching and training and really take it offline. So you don't have to do this in person and the scheduling and ride alongs and all these things.
I think you mean you take it online, right? Rather than offline.
Well, yes, yes. Yeah, you're right. Yes. Take it online. You're right. I'm using the term offline as in, yeah, you're right. Take it, bring it online. Exactly. very true. Yeah. I'm using offline in the sense of like, let's take this discussion offline, but yeah, totally online. Bringing it
just to make things confusing.
Good point. You're good. I'm glad you pointed that out because I need to be careful when I say that. Yeah, and so and then from there, what you have is, you know, say you have 1,000 videos that now have come in of all the reps in the field, you know, demonstrating how they do what they do best. You can now, the system is designed to where you can run a report and tease the top 5 best ones. And then you can then make those available in a content library for the whole rest of the field. So now I'm a sales rep and I can go into a Lego and I can say, I'm going to watch a video of the top salesperson who made $1 million last year because they're so great.
The top salesperson in my firm, right?
Or... my firm, exactly. Yeah. Company specific. And this is what's key about it. It's that, you know, it's this company specific information. Now you can go in and as a rep, watch the video, see how the best of the, you know, see how the best people are demonstrating how they sell and how they, you know, position products, how they talk to customers, how, you know, what they say, how they say it. And so you can really start to kind of disseminate. So really what you're doing is you're able to capture organizational knowledge and start to disseminate it.
That's great. Hey, just quick technical nuts and bolts question. Like, is it your server that's hosting all this, or do you just sort of provide the software and then they use their own internal servers to host it?
We are cloud, multi-tenant SaaS cloud servers. So we're on, you know, Amazon. Okay. Amazon Web Services. So yeah, it's a cloud platform, software as a service.
Well, I know that, you know, technically anything one posts on Facebook is property of Facebook. I sort of assume here that the proprietary relationship is different here, right?
Yep. So because we actually, great question. We, you know, we cut our teeth, so to speak, in kind of the most regulated industries. So we're in financial services, for example. We started out in financial services. Okay. with big asset managers. And at this point, we're at about 80% penetration for all assets under management in the U.S.
Wow.
All the firms. I mean, all, you know, big names.
Hope you have some stock options, dude.
Yeah, that may or may not be. Can't really say, but, you know, it's exciting for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we cut our teeth in the most heavily regulated industry. So you're talking, when you're talking about complying with FINRA and SEC, you know, you got to have backups. You got to have an archive of hard backups for 7 years. There's all kinds of stuff that you have to have. And so, yeah, we built the platform for, and as well as medical device. I mean,
so it's very solidly backed up, but at the same time, what they put up there is their own property, not yours.
Exactly. Their own property, 100%. Yep. And there's, you know, they have their own instance on the Allego cloud. It's secure enough to be compliant with the strictest most regulated industries.
Gotcha. And echo to it, Xer.sales, but I'm curious, like, how do customers pay for it? Is it a monthly subscription or a flat fee or some, you know, sometimes it's the big fee up front and then a smaller monthly?
Yeah. So it's a software as a service monthly subscription fee. Yep. So recurring, you know, so it's a, you know, one-time sale, recurring revenue, you know, business model. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
Very profitable.
Right. So it sounds like you are sort of doing the marketing in the sense of you're internally talking to your own company, to other folks at Lego, is how you promote the product. I was wondering if, like, do you do anything with, like, directly with marketing campaigns? Like, are you looking at ads or writing ad text or
great question.
Or anything like that?
Yeah, great question. So I kind of the first step for what I do is everything I described with kind of, you know, strategizing about positioning, messaging, competitive differentiation. Then from there, I'm, you know, the main content creator. So when it comes to writing, you know, white papers, case studies, business briefs, blogs, you know, blog posts, you know, I'm the main content creator for Allego as well, because it kind of flows naturally out from that. You know, you're you're the one who's kind of most ingrained or most kind of involved in kind of coming up with what the messaging is going to be. And then as product marketing manager, you're also the one to then kind of flesh out the actual content that goes out. So yeah, all of that. And then as well as going to conferences and doing software demos, you know, at conferences. I was out in Silicon Valley the other week, you know, doing a software demo. You do things like that, and as well as like webinars and so yeah, yeah, definitely a lot of outbound kind of outward facing.
Gotcha. I'm just curious, do you directly supervise anybody?
I do not, actually. I'm the only person in the product market. So product marketing is a function, and you know, at some in the business, and will eventually, as we go along, be a department. We're going to be hiring on somebody who will be like a content kind of creator, who is somebody that I'll be directing, you know, their activities. But right now, nope, I have nobody. I leverage a small army of freelancers and contractors. One of the big things that we do is we make use of this gig economy that we're in right now.
Go on. What do you leverage? What do you get freelancers to do for you?
So, I mean, contract writing will do. I'll kind of direct freelancers for like, hey, here's the topics that we want to write some stuff about. If we want to try to crank out a bunch more blog posts and things that, you know, I'm not able to, you know, I can't be in through five different places at once. So we'll do that, as well as design work. So like when I'm creating one pagers or sales sheets or different things that, you know, sales collateral for our team, you know, I'll get a contractor or a freelance artist to help put together graphic design stuff for the assets. So so generally contract writing and then design work.
Gotcha. Do you mind is there like a specific site or something that you find these people?
Yeah, I mean, so I go to Upwork. You know, it used to be Fiverr. I go there, and it works really well. And you can find folks that you can make a relationship with, and then have an ongoing. They start to learn. You start to learn about your business, and they start to have a little bit more of a, start to be able to write more substantive stuff, or get an idea. We have, you know, our whole brand guide with all of our colors and everything all, you know, just so, and folks start to really kind of understand the graphical element of the messages that we send and what, you know, who we are, our brand and everything. So yeah, Upwork.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very cool. AJ, I'm sure it varies, but about how many hours a week do you work?
I probably work maybe around 70.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of work. I mean, I work, you know, I'm in the office maybe, you know, 35 hours or so. And then I'm working from home, you know, the other 35.
Right. Putting stuff together, generating content.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Studying the market. Okay. You know, I probably figure about 40% of my time, probably maybe 30 to 40% of my time is input, you know, studying. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is output, creating stuff.
Gotcha. Sort of on that note, could you take us through your typical day, or if the days vary too much, your typical week?
Sure. Yeah. Probably typical week.
Sure.
You know, Monday I'll go in, and I'll probably have maybe three or four kind of creative projects that I'm working on, whether it be, you know, maybe one, a blog post that I want to put out for the week, piece of sales collateral, like a one pager or some kind of brochure or something that, you know, salespeople can use to sell. And then maybe another, you know, maybe I'm working on some kind of an internal training type of document on some XYZ competitor who's moved into our space or whatever it may be. So maybe three or four projects that are, you know, like maybe a little longer, maybe 4 or 6 hour projects, maybe I have those, you know, coming in on Monday. And so right away start working on that. And then, you know, I keep myself open for, you know, I get a lot of requests because I'm kind of at the intersection of a lot of different departments. So I'm kind of at the intersection of sales, marketing, and the product and engineering team. So, you know, I'll get, you know, maybe we have just found out we're going to be discontinuing a certain, a certain relationship with a third party vendor. And I have to, you know, I get a call, hey, we need to update the sales team and give them some information of what they're going to say to prospects when we talk about XYZ. So I'm just, you know, I field a lot of kind of requests coming in, and then I'm just kind of always working on probably three or four bigger kind of creative projects, whether I shouldn't say create, maybe two or three creative projects and one kind of internal kind of training type of project. And that's just kind of it. Yeah. Each day.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. And as you say, a good amount of, researching about what's the other industries and also about how often are you traveling?
I'm traveling. I mean, I go out to a conference at this point, I'd say, maybe once every like 2 months, I'll fly out somewhere. It's not a heck of a lot of traveling.
Gotcha.
I suspect as we continue along this route, now that I'm starting to get more into doing more demos, I'll probably end up starting to travel a little more, but I don't think it's going to be a heck of a lot.
That's good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, exactly. It's nice.
All right. Great. Well, hey, let's take it back now to 2009.
Yeah.
Terrible year to graduate.
I know. Yes, I know.
But okay, you were there. So, but I mean, I'm guessing you were like, even let's take it back to when you were at Berkeley still, and you could take it back as, you know, to before 09 if you wish.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you weren't thinking product marketing manager.
No, not even close.
Right.
Not at all. I had no idea I was going to end up in this. This is like so crazy to think about how the progression, but yeah, I mean,
yeah. So I was going to say, put us in your headspace there as you were kind of wrapping up Berkeley, and then let's take it sort of one step at a time from where you were then to where you are now, including like where you were at.
Yeah, totally. I think it would be a disservice to not even take a step back really quick from there, even to kind of lead up to how I got to Berkeley quickly.
Yeah, do it.
Yeah. So basically when I was about 15, I started playing drums when I was 12. You know, loved it, was good at it right away, loved it. Practiced all the time. Got it when I was about 15, found this program at New England Conservatory, the youth jazz, they have the youth program and they have a jazz program. So I started studying up there. And so I've always been kind of real, just kind of disciplined.
Are you from the Boston area?
From the Boston area, yep. Grew up in Somerset, Mass, which is like right next to Fall River area.
Cool.
So all through high school, you know, starting sophomore year, would go on every Saturday. I would come up to Boston, go to New England Conservatory, take classes, you know, ear training, theory, everything. Studied jazz really, really heavily, and practiced all the time through high school. Actually, didn't get good grades in high school. Got pretty poor grades throughout high school because I was very into music, and I would, you know, just was really just focused on music. Got to Berkeley, and continued just pursuing it really, really just like very focused. I mean, there was periods where when I was at Berkeley, there were stories about how like I would be off in the practice room practicing for like, you know, 12 hours a day for like multiple days in a row, like sleeping in the practice rooms, craziness, you know?
Wow.
like, uh, kind of like that movie, the recent movie that came out, minus the what's the movie that came, Whiplash, kind of like Whiplash, but minus the psychological breakdown.
Okay. That's good.
But that was kind of my time at Berkeley, just practicing a ton, playing a ton, played in a couple. There's a professor at Berkeley, David Zoffer. I played in his group, like his actual band, in Boston, played a lot of cool stuff, and jazz, you know, very, very into jazz.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. And then went out to my last semester, I believe, at Berkeley. I went to LA. They had the LA internship.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. I had a blast, met a lot of great contacts. And then ended up graduating and going right back out to LA in 2009. By the time 2009 hit, like up until then, I was very, like from age 15 until, you know, what was it, 20, right around then, I was like hardcore jazz. I'm going to go to Greenwich. I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to live in Greenwich Village. I'm going to play on the scene down there. You know, I was into real kind of like avant-garde, just like heavy improvisational music, jazz. But then kind of had a realization, you know, around maybe my last year at Berkeley, I realized like I realized there's not as much of an audience for it. And I really kind of need more recognition from the society than I was getting. I feel like, I don't know what it is, my personality, whatever it may be. I wanted to be able to affect change in a bigger way than what I was able to do. So then I said, well, I'll go out to LA and I'll try to be a movie star, or I'll try to do something where, like, you know, try to do something bigger, where I was able to do something larger.
No, were you really thinking like movies or anything, or were you just thinking like you'd try playing a more popular genre of music?
It was both. I was like, okay, I can play more kind of popular stuff. But my plan was, you know, at 20 years old, my plan, or 21, my plan was like, hey, I'll go to LA. Maybe I can become like a star, and then I can have the cameras on me, and then I can show the world this beautiful art form that I see, and that a small group of people in the world see, but others can't see because it doesn't get enough attention. You know,
okay.
these plans that you concoct as a young person. So went out there, and, you know, and I had a background. I did a lot of theater growing up. So I have an acting background. So when I went out to LA, I got in with a lot of people in the movie business and was able to actually ended up starring in a short film that we ended up premiering at Sundance. Film festival. Yeah, it was really cool. And it was it wasn't in competition, but it was at one of the Gen Art. It was at, they had a event at Sundance that we premiered it at. It was cool. And then ended up doing some more stuff out in LA with acting and things like that. But really kind of realized as I was doing all that, like, hey, this is exciting. And maybe I can really go somewhere with this, but this isn't really what I'm, you know, I'm still like, I couldn't get over this kind of passion that I realized it really wasn't something I was super passionate about ever really in the first place.
The acting thing,
you know, the acting thing. Exactly. And the kind of the more commercial thing. I mean, the whole reason I got into music and went to Berkeley was because I loved this real hard bop or post bop jazz that came out of the, you know, out of the 60s and is still kind of continuing, this kind of real, you know, Wayne Shorter, Miles Davis, second great quintet, late period Coltrane, Ornette Coleman, you know, that whole kind of scene. And, that was the reason, that was what I loved from the beginning. And then I kind of realized, hey, I'm this isn't really me out here in LA doing this stuff. So moved back to Massachusetts.
And so when are we again? We're in like,
we're about 2000, 11 at this point.
So you were like in LA gigging and doing a little acting and stuff for a couple
about
of years.
About 2 years. Yeah. Yep. Okay. About 2 years. Yep.
Gotcha. Can I just ask really quickly, was your income mostly from music at that point, or were you?
No. My income was from odd jobs, bartending and other things. And then I was doing kind of these projects, artistic projects, as, you know, on, you know, not as income producing for sure.
Nope. Gotcha.
Yep. Gotcha. Never really figured that out.
That's all good. You're hoping to strike pay dirt. It happened. That's not an uncommon first couple years for lots of people.
Exactly. Yep. So, yeah. And had some cool music stuff too. I mean, I played a gig at the Viper Room, which is a pretty famous club out in LA. I don't know if you know about it. It's on Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, fun.
Rock club, like Johnny Depp used to own it. It was big club. It was cool, like, you know, just stuff like that. Got in with some cool musicians, played with some real cool studio musicians, and but yeah, so did that for like 2 years. Never was able to really put together an income from it. You know, was still having to rely on bartending and things like that.
Sure.
And then I came back. So then I came back to Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of my original thought was, well, maybe I'll go do like a master's in music. That was kind of the first thought. And ended up getting on the wait list for the master's program at the at New England Conservatory that I'd wanted to go to. And then so I said, well, I better, you know, I got to get a job. So I got into sales. Okay.
You're like, okay, you need to make some money here. Were you living at home or get in your own place?
Mm-hmm. Came back. I was with my girlfriend or fiance at the time, who was now my wife.
Cool.
We moved back in at my mom's house in Massachusetts in Somerset.
Hey, it's cool.
Yeah.
So you're like, hey, I need a job. How did you go about getting that sales job?
Hmm. Well, my mother is in sales as well. She sells mattresses over at Jordan's. And so she's got a long history of being in the business, in the furniture sales business, and you know, now more mattresses. But
mm-hmm.
So she got me a job. She knew a guy who was the kind of a regional manager at Sleepy's. If you remember Sleepy's, they're no longer. They're now a mattress firm, I guess. But so she was able to talk to him.
Similar industry to what she was in.
Exactly. Yep. So yeah, this you know, kind of the classic story of, you know, getting into the same industry a parent is in. You know,
mm-hmm.
So got, you know, so was able was, you know, was able to do that, and I, you know, I had people to model. You know, I was able to model my mom, and also my dad is in sales. He lives in Florida, but he's in car sales his whole career. You know, sells and BMW or Mercedes, you know, and has had a successful career doing it as a career high ticket retail salesperson.
Gotcha.
So my mom helped me get hired at this, you know, at Sleepy's, and started working there and started selling mattresses. And, you know, it was a huge change. And this is part of the story that I always like to kind of stress with people, is like, I came from, you know, avant-garde jazz drummer to like, I'm here, I'm trying to hustle, sell mattresses to people. And like, you know, people are like, don't want to buy. And I'm like, you know, they're like telling me, no, dude, you have to like, you got to try to convince them to buy right now. And you got to try to, you know, you got to be a little pushy and things like that. And it was just like a totally different world. But it was like I was able to apply everything I learned in music and everything I learned just in this world that I was going to a totally different world,
uh-huh.
Like totally different. And a world that even like my previous world kind of hated on. To some degree, you know, like, oh, business and all the icky sales, and it's kind of, it's not pure, you know.
Yeah, and I will say selling mattresses, there is, I don't know, it's cool.
That's
like, it's not like some, like, really hip product, right?
Right, exactly. It's just very much just kind of like, oh, and there's such a stereotype around the mattress salesman who's, like, you know, pushy and this and that. You know, so yeah, it was very much just kind of like, well, yeah, it was a totally different world altogether. And I still, you know, I'll talk with some of my old teachers from NEC and from Berkeley and some of my old friends, and they're like, dude, how did you do that? Like, how did you possibly go from what we were doing to this? And I'm like, you know what? The funniest thing is, it's the same damn thing. It's literally the same thing. It's hard to describe, but when you put your passion into something, mm-hmm. you can then put it into other things that may seem totally different on the surface. So, you know, that's, you know, I always preach about that to people, but, yeah, so ended up doing that, had success with it, started taking it more seriously, had a real kind of life-changing increase in income.
Hey, can I ask, like, sort of once the mattress thing was rolling, like, do you mind sharing about how much you were making selling mattresses?
Sure, yeah. I mean, so I started out, when I first started, probably making maybe $36,000 when I first started, when I very, very first, and I didn't know anything about it. Then I started, this is what kind of plays into my current role, right?
Yeah.
My current role is product marketing manager yeah. at Allego. You know, I started selling mattresses. I was, you know, making $36,000. My wife and I, you know, struggling. It's tough. Yeah. And, you know, as we're going along, I started taking sales more seriously as a discipline, started reading. I'm a voracious reader as it is. So I started kind of pouring that energy into reading sales books. You know, reading about, you know, Tom Hopkins, How to Master the Art of Selling, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, Jeffrey Gittimer. I started reading all these books on sales mm-hmm. and kind of taking it seriously as a discipline, which is sales learning, which is what we sell, which is what I'm now, this company that I'm at, this is what we sell. We sell taking sales seriously as a discipline, right?
Right.
So I started doing that, and within maybe a year and a half, my income slowly started going up and up and up into 40, 50, 60. Then I ended up getting hired. I started applying for a job at Jordan's Furniture in the mattress department where my mom was at, of course, in a different store because you can't be in the same store as a relative like that. But so I applied to Jordan's because I knew I could make a lot more money there. I applied there every 6 months for 2 years before I got that job.
Okay. Wow.
and I just kept, you know, trying to get better and better. Finally got there, get better and better. Got to the point where, you know, within 2 years of having started at Sleepy's, I was up to making about $90,000 selling mattresses. Yeah. And like, it was like amazing. And it was like, I felt like, you know, it was life changing. You know, and so, and I just felt more in control and, you know, and everything. And that's what kind of inspired me to then say, well, you know what? I can sell stuff. I like doing this. I want to sell my own products. instead of selling someone else's products, I want to sell my own products someday. So started kind of entertaining the idea of business school, you know, getting an MBA. Mm-hmm. And then started, you know, applying for business school programs, and then got into a couple and went to Babson.
So let's see, you're so what are you applying in? What, like late 2013, and then get into?
About late 2013. Actually, you know what? You know, late 2013 is when the idea first hit. And actually that idea hit when I had started succeeding more even at Sleepy's before I went to Jordan's and really had a big boost.
Okay.
About late 2013 I started, you know, and the funny thing is, you know, going back to, you know, to take the exam to go to business school.
It's a GMAT.
It's the GMAT, exactly. So I mean, it's like, you know, you can't use a calculator, which is the difference between that and the GRE. So, you know, you're doing it by hand, long division, and then going back and then much, much more. I mean, having to go back and relearn algebra and geometry and all these things that I had never, that I hadn't even paid attention to since like almost junior high. I mean, I really, right. did, you know, I took math. I didn't take any math classes after 11th grade. But before, you know, even before that, since eighth grade, I really didn't pay attention in math class. I was not a good student. Like I said, I was very focused on music. So I had to relearn all these things and, was able to do it and got good scores on the GMAT and ended up getting got like three-quarter scholarships at Babson, at BU, Northeastern.
Wow.
Was able to play them, kind of almost leverage.
Really inspiring that you went from like not really being much of an academic or math guy to doing so well that you got scholarships. That's incredible.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of musicians would be shocked at how good they probably might be at math when, even though there's a, I think what the problem is there's often a fear kind of math. And I'm sure I read a little bit about your courses that you teach, economics professor.
Economics. I mean, officially I'm a liberal arts professor,
right?
But I do economics, statistics, and then a more general math class.
Right. Yes, that's right. Oh, so you're like probably very interested in this. It's, in my story here. I mean, I realized that, math and, thinking about data, I actually ended up on there's a section on this test, the GMAT, it's the newer kind of thing since 2012, they've been doing it. It's called the integrated reasoning section. And it's like, it's kind of a mix of verbal and quantitative.
Oh, interesting.
And it's to kind of measure your ability to be able to integrate information from multiple data sources. So it'll be kind of like a long word problem with quantitative components to it. And, maybe a couple different data sets that you got to, I ended up getting a perfect score on that section. It was the last thing I ever thought that I'd be, I said to myself, oh, I'm not a math guy. I can't do it. And it turns out, no, that's not true. Like, I just hadn't focused on it. So this is another thing I preach.
Cool. So you start at Babson in fall of 2014?
Fall of 2015. So I took about a year. It took me about a year and a half of studying for this thing. And in that period of time, I said, well, I don't know, maybe I won't go, but I actually kept studying for the thing just in case. Ended up, about a year and a half, year or so.
You put a lot of effort into doing well in the GMAT. You didn't just walk in or,
Right. Put a lot of effort. I couldn't afford to take a class on it. So I really had to just kind of take a lot of time and kind of study it myself. So I got, I got help. My wife's uncle is, he has a business helping students prep for these kind of exams. So he was like, hey, here's the books you want to check out. I checked out the Manhattan GMAT series, and that really helped me study for it on my own. So, yeah, it's fall of 2015, though. Yep.
All right, so you get into Babson, you said?
Yep, got into Babson. Yeah, got into Babson, Northeastern, BU, and BC,
gotcha.
And decided to go with Babson.
Gotcha. Yeah, Babson's like basically a pure business college, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And they have a real heavy focus on entrepreneurship. They got, when you look, they have like U.S. News and the others do the rankings and this and that. And, Babson gets like number one for entrepreneurship MBA like every year. So I was really interested in entrepreneurship and I realized, I want to start a company of my own at some point, after I get some more experience and contacts and, build up my network and this and that. But, so Babson was the right fit. Babson was more, I could just kind of tell there's more creative types because you get the entrepreneurship thing. It's not so much the classic business school, like preparing you to go into a large corporation as a manager. It's more, it's a little more creative, a little more my style.
Gotcha. Now, when you were doing this MBA, did you sort of leave mattress sales or were you working still at the same time?
No, I left, 100% left. I walked away and went to my wife and I went from me making, you know, what I was making in selling mattresses to, you know, nothing. two years. Cause we said, you know, if I'm going to do this, I need to do it full time, and I need to do the, you know, the 2 year full time program. And so I stepped out of the workforce and went there. Yep.
Gotcha. So then you finish it in the spring of 17.
Exactly. Yep.
And it sounds like you had alluded to this earlier. During part of that time, you had an internship with the Lego. Is that correct?
That's correct. Actually, within, yeah. Yep.
How did you go about getting that internship?
So I started, this is something, you know, I go back to Babson sometimes, and I'll give, like, you know, I'll do like sessions and talks and this and that with students to try to give, you know, give back a little bit and give some advice and how I did it. And this is the one thing I always say, if you this is a little, this expression is a little crude, but I don't care.
Please.
If you throw enough crap at the wall, eventually something will stick. And that's how I went about, you know, as soon as I got to Babson, right away, I started looking around. I had my first interview. Get this. I had my first interview for summer internship September 9th, I think. And like most students hadn't even started looking at their summer internship until April, you know?
Oh, yeah, right.
You know, but I just said, you know what? Like, I know this is critical. And so I just started, you know, just like doing as much as I possibly could, showing up to every career event. Every time an employer would come to Babson, you know, they do these little employer nights where you go and you learn about the company, and you meet with them and you exchange business cards, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I started going to like every one of those, showing up in a suit, and everybody's making fun of me. Oh, what are you showing up in a suit for? I said, you know what, whatever. And ended up, you know, went to so many different things, all kinds of stuff that was like totally not what I would be interested in, but still showed up anyway. And then finally, the Career Center, they really got to know me. And one of the women there, Lily Awad, she was into technology. And she was like, hey, there's this tech company, Allego. They do something with sales. And I know you have a sales background, Jake. So, hey, maybe you should check them out. I ended up going out. They did a company trek where, you know, you go to the company with a couple people and you check it out. And I went there and I really hit it off with one of the co-founders. And this was still when the company was small. It was only probably about 20 people. And, you know, I really hit it off with one of the co-founders. He was a salesperson, and, you know, he's a student of sales himself, and, you know, successful sales trainer, you know, himself. And yeah. And then just ended up, I said, hey, you know, I really want to do marketing, because, you know, and he was like, well, do you want to do sales for us? And I was like, well, I maybe, but, you know, I really want to learn a different discipline within business, because, you know, I'm looking one day to start my own business, and I want to learn something else from, I feel like I kind of have a good grasp of sales. So I ended up doing, you know, going in the marketing department as an intern. Actually started that internship in January of 2016. So I started, you know, the MBA program started in September of 2015. And within, you know, by the second semester, I was already in my internship. So I was at that point.
I'm not going to ask how much, but just curious, was this a paid internship or an unpaid?
This was actually, for the first little while, unpaid. We struck an agreement to say, we'll come in at first unpaid. Then when summer hits, we will do a paid internship.
Gotcha.
And so for the first little while, it was unpaid. It was just experience. You know, I had no marketing experience whatsoever. So I had no kind of leg to stand on to try to charge anything. But I said, you know what? I believe in this company. I like this co-founder. I like both of these co-founders. I like these people. And I believe in this product. And I think this is going to be great for me. And I did it. And, you know, this is in the first year of your MBA program is like chaotic. I mean, it's, you know, you're getting hit with a million things. And I was, you know, in school, you know, 30, 40 hours a week. And then at this internship, another 30 hours a week. I mean, I was going crazy, and it was craziness, but so worth it in the end, you know?
Sure. Sure. So as you said, so it sounds like that turned into paid internship in the summer, yep. Which what I'm making a guess here, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm guessing you kept working there part-time after the summer, and they probably kept paying you.
Exactly. Yep.
And
exactly.
And then was there just kind of an agreement that, like, hey, I'm graduating in May. Well, when you graduate, we'll pull you in full-time?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of like,
Did it become clear that this was going to actually be a job?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, I mean, when summer was over, we were going back now into my second year.
Yeah.
It was kind of like unspoken. I just continued on at the same rate that I was at. Still continued on and basically the same number. Well, I dropped down my hours a little because in the summer I was working more like 40 hours. And then when fall hit, back to school, dropped down the hours a little. But, it was kind of, we hadn't really talked about it. And I was like, what do I do? How do I approach this? Like, when should I talk about, a full time, committing more seriously as a full time position in May? And, then my boss ended up leaving, the company, which was a big thing. So it was like, oh my God, the person that I've been working under now,
the one who knows you and can recommend you, is gone.
Exactly. So I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do? And so then my current boss now, Andrew Holly, who's chief marketing officer at Allego, he came in, new person. And this was, and I was planning on talking to my boss in January about, hey, I want to try to figure something out so we can make a commitment here. My boss left in December, I think. And so Andrew comes in. New boss, like a month before I was planning on talking about, bringing up this conversation. So it was kind of tough. I was like, oh crap, what am I going to do? Just, I proceeded along the same plan and really tried to show how, and also the rest of the organization vouched for me. And, I had made a reputation at that point and it ended up working out. I started talking about it with my boss in January and I asked, how can we talk about me coming on full time? And then that's what started the conversation for product marketing. And then I ended up doing that.
And then was it basically like, okay, you finish in May and take a little vacation and then you're working here?
Yeah. Well, actually I said, that was one possibility, but we actually there was a plan to hire a product marketing manager in the spring. So I said, I got a couple of my classes are finishing, wrapping up in mid-March. I'll start full time, And so I started full time in mid-March when I was still in school for a couple classes, but my schoolwork had gotten down to maybe 20, 30 hours a week. So I was able to really jump in. So I jumped in mid-March of 2017.
Gotcha. Right. Straight into the role you're in now.
Yeah. Yep.
And I imagine you'd been doing stuff sort of related to that while an intern, so it wasn't like,
yes,
being thrown into a swimming pool suddenly. It was just like, okay.
It was exactly right. I mean, as an intern, I had kind of become, one of the, that's another story. As an intern, when I got there, the kind of the tasks that I was getting assigned were just like, hey, Jake, we have like 500 inbound leads that nobody's contacted. Can you reach out to them? So then I'm like, okay. So sit there for like 5 hours straight, like reaching out to, like doing these like real kind of tasks that, I tell people, don't turn your nose up at anything, do that stuff, do all those little tasks. But then keep your eyes peeled for a more strategic, better kind of things. And so when I was there as an intern, one of the things that I kept my eyes peeled about was I dug into our data for our website and I was able to show the chief marketing officer, hey, we're not blogging enough. We're not doing enough blog posts. And, I could show a point. I think it was a .59 correlation between number of blog posts that we put out per month and the number of website traffic, the number of inbound traffic we get to the website. And so, and then it was kind of like, well, who are we going to do? Who's going to write the posts? And I said, well, hey, I can write. So I started writing. And that's really what kind of took it off. And so as product marketing, that's, you know, your kind of your core competency is ability to write. So I'd already been kind of the main content. I really took over as like really kind of the main writer at the company. I started writing white papers and writing all these different things.
Like the best intern ever.
Yeah.
Got it. So that, yeah, it's a natural fit. And all right. And here you are.
And here I am.
All right. Well, hey, let's move on to the third and final part of the interview.
Sure.
My next question for you, and there's no right or wrong answer, is these days, what's your current relationship with music?
My current relationship with music is actually better than it's ever been, ever. It feels like I'm able to play music as kind of a spiritual activity of mine that helps me, like a therapeutic activity. I'm able to play exactly what I want when I want. Over the last probably 6 to 8 months, I have not gotten to play as much. But you know, for the last year prior to that, you know, I was going and, you know, I have relationships with a couple of professors at Berkeley that I go and play with. Manuel Kaufman, Jamie Stewartson, David Zoffer, you know, and just I'm able to now play the kind of music that I want to play at any time. Now, granted, the downside is I don't get to play as much as if I were a professional musician. So however,
when you play, are you basically saying like you get together and you play and it's fun, or are we talking like gigs here?
It's both. Not as many gigs, but still gigs for sure.
Okay.
But you know, playing at like, you know, art centers and different places like that. Not as many gigs though. It's more showing up and playing improvised jam sessions. You know, because my thing is improvisation, so I love improvising. So, you know, showing up and just playing to play. And recording it and then listening afterwards and being like, wow, listen to that moment that we were all so synced up in that improvisation. It's really kind of now it's really become kind of my spiritual activity.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So and would you believe me if I said that you're not the first or second or 20th person who has talked about how they're enjoying music more?
Yeah.
Now that doing the music, as you say, you could afford to say like, that's not the thing I want to do.
Exactly right. That's exactly it. I can afford to say, you know what? I'm not going to play this thing that is not exactly what I want to play. Yep. I do believe that. That I believe that 100%, but it's cool to hear that's what I would have thought.
Yep. So, next question I have is I guess you're working now as a, you know, product marketing manager. Sounds like you did a great job. You know, you were sort of part doing that job even while you were the intern at Allego. And you're a very excited growing company. This is great. And obviously you did go and get your MBA. You know, I'm sure most product marketing managers don't have a music degree.
Right.
So it's like, when you think back to your Berkeley experience, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well relative to if you'd gone somewhere else to prepare you for what you're doing now?
Yeah. I mean, what were you going to say?
I just said let her rip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, honestly, my Berkeley experience and my experience just my brought my larger experience in with music education that I went through. So I guess, yeah, my Berkeley experience and then my experience in high school as well. It gives me an edge that I think no one else has. I feel like I am able to think creatively to a degree that most folks are just not, I feel like just haven't had the practice at doing. I think the biggest thing is the creativity, because creativity, So I'm a firm believer that every single person is creative. There's no person, when someone says, "Oh, I'm not creative," that's BS. You are creative. We all are creative. It's a skill. It's a skill that you develop to be able to tap into your creativity that we all have. And my experience at Berkeley helped me learn how to tap into that. And so that, you know, and creativity, you know, and you learn how to tap into it with music, right? But then it's like, then you tap into it and you become able to tap into it with everything else in life, whether it be writing, you know, like writing something or creating, you know, like a marketing asset or coming up with, you know, what, like I talked about with the positioning thing, you know, that's a very creative kind of thing. Like, what is our, it's a philosophical kind of question. Who are we? What is our company? What is this? What is this thing? What's the best way to define this? That's a creative pursuit. And to be able to tap into your creativity, you know, that's something that gives me an edge over anybody else. You know, I feel, and, yeah, so that number one, and then number two, pursuing your passion. You know, I learned through Berkeley and through previous experience at New England Conservatory in high school that I don't need to make sacrifices ever. I can pursue, I can and should always pursue what I want to do in any form. Now, it's not a matter of being belligerent and not listening to other people. You got to listen and you have to take advice and you have to take inputs. But, you know, there's a certain.
So what are you, I'm just trying to understand what you mean by pursuing. Are you basically saying that you're feeling like you can do anything you put your mind to?
Yes, I feel like I can do anything I put my mind to. That is exactly how to, that is hitting the nail on the head. That's exactly it. I can do anything I put my mind to, and I should. When I want to do something, if I have an idea of something I want to pursue, I should pursue it. And that's something I learned through my experience at music at Berkeley and at New England Conservatory in high school, for 100%. So, yeah, kind of those two things. And then the third thing would be the discipline. I mean, the discipline to learn an instrument carries over to every aspect of my life. I am able to take a long view on things that I feel like I see others have struggling with more. Like, it's not working. It's not coming together. I'm working on this one thing, you know, and it's just not working. And shit, it's just not working out. And whereas for me, like, I have this experience. I've had this experience of, you know, I mean, learning an instrument is a labor of love, but it is a labor for sure. Emphasize the labor. Right. And like, you know, and I read you're a bass player. So, I mean, you know, like it's, you sit there and it's just like, it can be so painful some days. And some days you go, you know, weeks, maybe months, and you feel like you're not moving forward at all. And then one day, all of a sudden, boom, the floodgate. And then you move forward a bunch. And then you go, wow, okay. Like, all that hard work, it just kind of got bottled up, and then boom, I jumped ahead. You have a memory of what it's like to slowly, over like long, painful practicing years, getting better at something, and that has been, I mean, that is a critical aspect of that. That's been critical for me, just getting better and pursuing other things. 100%.
Gotcha. All right, that's great. Well, hey, let's turn that question around now.
Sure.
Because Berkeley does give that one degree of bachelor's in music, and you went there knowing that. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, you've done very well for yourself in the years since. Mm-hmm. But all that said, like, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, like, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete?
That's a tough one for me because I look back so fondly.
There is a percentage of people who just say no, and then I'm like another satisfied customer. But if there's anything that you know, you're sort of like, hey, I wish this were a little different, or be nice if current students learn this too, or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Now's the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say. I think, you know, maybe here's the one thing I would say is that maybe more structure at Berkeley, because for me, I felt like it was very open and I was able to kind of pick my path to some degree. Mm-hmm. And for me, that worked out well, but I did see others who it didn't work out so well for, to kind of just have it as open as it was. So maybe I don't quite know what it is, because you start to introduce
I don't
too
quite
much.
Know what you mean by structure. Do you just mean like take these classes and these classes and these classes, or are you talking?
Yeah, or more prescriptive and not even just taking these particular classes, but even within some of the classes, having more prescriptive or you know what? No, maybe it is more, because when I would take certain classes, it would be very structured, very hard. But it was like I chose, like for example, there was a class, atonal solfege. It was a great class I took at Berkeley, and it was like the hardest class I took there, and it was totally optional. And if Berkeley were to make a class like that mandatory, it would scare people away. But it would also, I think it would make for a richer experience for some folks. And I wonder what other classes there were that were really hard and like just so hard that I didn't take because I didn't happen to choose them.
So it sounds like I'm not trying to put words in your mouth here, but it sounds like you're feeling like maybe if you didn't play your cards right, Berkeley was a little not challenging enough.
Yes.
So you sort of feel like there should have been a little more challenge that people were thrown into.
Yes, precisely. That's exactly how I would put it. Those are good words to put in my mouth. That's exactly what I would say.
Okay, cool. You don't have to just humor me, you know.
No, I'm not. It's literally okay. That's getting at the heart of what it is. Like I saw that I was able to choose a lot of the stuff, choose my own path to a lot of to a big degree, and I kind of thought, maybe there am I missing was I missing out on some stuff?
Sure, great. All right, so my next question I have for you is, as you say, you spent a couple years bartending and trying this and that, and you know, having it not really work out, feel like a guy, I'm not really on a good path. You came home, you started selling mattresses, which really kind of ultimately led you to where you are today, you know, or at least inspired you to then go to business school, which led you. So let's say it took a couple years. You may not have realized you were on the path when you got that first mattress job.
Yeah.
But, you know, you were on your way in hindsight. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks maybe are still where you were in the first 2 years. Right? Recent grads who haven't yet found that path.
Yep.
And also, let's even say, people in their last year at Berkeley staring out into the world and being like, oh my God, what do I do now?
Yeah.
So, right. So for either or both of those groups, do you have any advice?
Yeah. So I think for the group that is that is pursuing something, has left Berkeley already, has graduated or left, and is on a path, and they're not sure if they're on the path that they're ultimately going to be on. I mean, I think I guess to the folks who are staring out, you know, at the end of Berkeley, I would say the advice that I would give them, if I could give them one advice,
Limit it to one.
Okay, yeah,
you don't have to limit it to one. Yeah, three things, and you can't decide which to say, say them all.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think I would say number one, keep pursuing what you think is right. Keep pursuing what you think is the right thing, and don't let anybody else tell you otherwise, okay? That's the number one thing. Keep pursuing because we know, we all have kind of an intuition for what is going to be the right thing for us to do. And, you know, you might get into a new thing that at first you thought it was the right thing, And then as you're getting along in it, you kind of say, oh, maybe this isn't turning out to be so much. Well, at that point, if that's what your voice inside is telling you, listen to it. If the thing you're doing right now is, well, maybe this isn't quite it, make an adjustment. You know, I think the biggest thing that people, this is a separate point now.
Sure.
Don't underestimate the power of minor adjustments. Okay. Like that's another big thing is I think people think, oh, I need to like switch the whole thing up and flip directions. And this is totally off. Don't underestimate how powerful it can be to say, okay, I've been pursuing this one thing and it felt right at first, but now maybe it's not quite right. Well, kind of don't just like go back to the drawing board and say, wow, this is all I've screwed up. This is it. Now I've wasted time. You know, don't forget about how profound it can be to just make a minor adjustment. Maybe there's another industry that's adjacent to where you're in, or maybe there's another kind of job, or maybe another kind of path that you're going down that's kind of a slight veering off of where you're at right now. Just don't.
Man, I wish someone had said that to me when I was 23.
Yeah. I know. I wish someone had said that to me too, because I feel like I kind of learned it the hard way. I feel like I kind of, you know, got discouraged so many times when I shouldn't have. I should have just not gotten discouraged and thought, oh, what have I done? You know, I've wasted a bunch of years doing this one thing. Oh, that's another one. Don't ever look back and don't regret anything. Like, yeah, okay, be reasonable. I mean, if you've done something bad, you should regret it, obviously. But like in general with your, you know, don't ever regret having, you know, pursued what you wanted to pursue and pursued your passion. Don't ever regret that, because I swear it always comes back to help you. Like, you know, I talk to people who are like, ah, you know, I was in this one career, you know, for a number of years. And like, you know, I was in this, you know, one area of law and, you know, I was practicing, you know, this one area of law for a bunch of years. And like, I don't like it. And what am I going to do? Like now I've got all, you know, I'm kind of stuck in it now. You know, I can't go to another area of law. You know, I don't know it. Or like, you know, I've been in one, you know, I've been in accounting for all these years. And I don't love this particular area of accounting that I'm in. I don't know what I'm going to do now, but I have to stay with it. No. If you're going to learn anything from my story, I went from avant-garde jazz musician to business person. That is the biggest jump you can imagine. And I'm telling you, and I would tell everybody that the stuff that you learn in no matter what it is that you pursue always carries over, and if you always attack everything in life with passion, no matter what you do, it doesn't matter. You could end up in some crazy other thing that you would never think, and you'll be successful as long as you don't regret the things that you've done, and don't regret the path that you've pursuing your passion. That's my biggest advice.
Gotcha. Well, that's great. We're gonna focus in a little bit now.
Sure.
Because, you know, I feel like somewhere around my 117th interview.
Nice.
And your marketing is one of the more common things for people to be in. I don't know, maybe you're my eighth or ninth person in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the people who listen to this interview, I don't think anyone's going to listen to all 117 interviews.
Yeah.
But there may be people who are seriously thinking about marketing. Yeah. And right, those are the people who are going to be listening here.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say for someone specifically thinking like, hey, marketing, or even like, hey, like, you know, they'd probably sift through and be like, okay, so these people are working marketing agencies. This guy sort of is rated this like high tech firm, and you know, he's sort of part of this exciting like growth industry. Like, hey, this seems pretty cool. So for mm-hmm. someone wanting to get into marketing, or if you want to focus even more like in-house marketing or marketing in high tech or something, do you have any specific advice for them?
Yeah. And someone who like a Berkeley grad, somebody who was thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would say get familiar with and develop an appreciation for and maybe even a fascination with markets, okay? Because I think a lot of folks go into marketing thinking, well, you know, it's like I can be creative. You know, I can create stuff, create marketing assets, write, create graphically cool marketing pieces and things like that. And I think a lot of folks forget that at the core of what it's all about is economics and business and markets. And so my advice would be, but that doesn't mean it's not a creative pursuit. Okay. Because I still, for me, I look at, I've developed this real fascination with markets and with economics and with how it's kind of fuels our society and it fuels, you know, our lifestyle and if, you know, this lifestyle that we enjoy, you know, in kind of the this country and the kind of the Western world or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. You know, so I would say advice for anybody that's looking to get into marketing, I think, you know, from Berkeley, you're going to be, as far as the creative stuff, you're good to go. Like if you're coming out of Berkeley, you're going to be like creative wise, like, cause that's part of marketing is being creative. That's you're good there. But I would say don't underestimate, you know, that it's the kind of the core of what it's about is selling, is, you know, is value exchange, you know, and here's the thing. If you dig into that a bit, you'll start to be able to apply your creative fascination with music to the whole act of value exchange, because it really is a fascinating subject, and you'll start to you'll have a lot of success if you focus on that. You know, don't underestimate that it's about markets and it's about value exchange.
Okay, that's great. Well, hey Jake, I just have one last question for you.
Sure.
Which is, you have the mic, and you're being recorded. So, Is there anything we missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
Oh man, we touched on. it feels good. This is a very cathartic experience for me. I'm happy to be able to. I feel like I've been able to go through my experience, and this is great. I don't think so. I think we touched on everything that I would like to communicate to like-minded spirits, you know, about how to, you know, about what I've learned. So yeah, I don't think so.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, hey Jake, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise.
I loved hearing your story. So
yeah.
Hey, look for a text from me in the very near future.
Yep.
And have a great evening. Best of luck.
Hey, appreciate it. You too, Kevin. I really appreciate what you're doing, and you know, let me know if you need some, you know, if you need me for anything. I, you know, I'm always interested in speaking or talking to people, or if you have students who are interested in marketing, let me know. You know, I'd love to help. I'm always trying to give back to my alma mater. So,
That's very nice of you, and I will be in touch.
Yeah, please do.
All right. Have a good night now.
Okay, Kevin. Take care.
You too.
Okay, bye.